I've pivoted before in other companies, and pivoting is a very gentle way to saying we sincerely fucked up and wasted a lot of money in the process, right? So for this company specifically, Tom and I wanted to know that there is a business, that there is a clear pain, that there wasn't like an aha solution for people, and that we really gave a shit about the people we were solving problems for.
Hey, it's Adam Schoenfeld. Welcome back to the Built in Seattle podcast, where Seattle's top entrepreneurs, investors, and leaders share their stories and their lessons from behind the scenes. If you like this show, you might also like my personal newsletter. Each week, I share a lesson, a question, or an idea that I've picked up while learning from others. Subscribe at adaminseattle.com. On this episode, I met with Omri Moore. He's the CEO and co-founder at Routable. Routable just raised a $30 million Series B. They have about 40 employees, fully remote team, but leadership's in Seattle. Omri is a three-time founder. In Routable, he took a lot of the lessons from pivoting and making assumptions in past companies to doing one of the most rigorous customer discovery exercises that I've ever heard about. He shared the details of that process and how it helped him build conviction and customer empathy up front. I hope you enjoy the conversation. I'm here with the one, the only, Omri Moore. Hey, Omri, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Adam.
All right, let's start with the new stuff, the Series B that you just raised, and then we can go talk about your path in getting there, because I know it's been a winding road. How did it come together?
We raised $30 million. It's led by Sam Altman and a bunch of amazing people, and it came together pretty quickly. We raised our Series A last year in January. We didn't announce it until August, but the market is hot right now. And I think we're doing well, and we're in an interesting space where I'd say 5 years ago, accounts payable and accounts receivable was extremely boring. And right now, everything fintech or embedded fintech is extremely hot. And that's it. Talked to a few funds. I've known Sam for a long time, and I was really excited to work with him formally, going from a friend to an investment relationship and scale this business. And the whole goal for this round is just growth, right? To continue growing and to continue building the best platform for business payments.
What got investors excited about this round?
Yeah, I think this was a goal for 2020, but in 2019 and 2020, we were primarily serving SMBs. And our goal was to launch our mid-market product and to be able to serve larger companies, anywhere from, I'd say, 100 to 1,000 people now. So a little enterprisey too. And we actually got to shipping that product and showing some validation in it. Solving high volume accounts payable for small business and hot startups is good, but solving it for larger businesses that have the full finance team, so the controller, the VP of finance, the director of accounting, and the CFO, is much different. It's a lot harder. There's a lot more compliance. There's a lot more hoops that you have to jump through. And I think it was our velocity in shipping good product, like really great product. And it was also our ability to rip out competitors that made the round come together quickly. And then I'm also going to blame the market too, right? Mm-hmm. Like today, I think everything is getting more money. SPACs are happening.
Right.
Money's moving around.
But the best companies are getting more money, but right? That's what's happening. The winners are...
That is true.
Getting more, and if you're not growing, then you can't really do it.
I'm with you 1,000%. This is my third company, and I remember like back in 2013, like doing 9 months to close the seed. Like I've been in those days too. This was, I think, a couple weeks max. Like for our A, it was less than a day. You get it.
Yeah.
It's completely different.
It's not normal. By historical standards.
The difference is, and I truly believe this, is that we have picked a really boring business that exists at every company. And there isn't still a clear aha moment that most finance teams have for scaling their business payments. And that's what we want to own. And I think that there's a lot of investment in the now. And then there's a lot of excitement about the future.
You talked about one of the things investors got excited about was your ability to ship really high quality product. Mm-hmm. And I know you as a very product centric entrepreneur, and I know like your background in design. I know your work and I know the care you put into it. How does that actually come through when you're talking to investors? Like, what's the way that actually gets communicated and how they actually can see and feel that?
I like to demo my product. I still demo a lot. Like, I'm on sales calls, et cetera. So I think that a good investor will typically ask to see the goods and see what we've built, and we'll poke around and ask, how is this different than our competitors? What have we built? What of it is proprietary? What are we built on top of? Stuff like that. Another side of it is talking to customers. What I did when we put together our data room, we put together not only examples of like how companies are using us, of our top customers, but we also made introductions to our top customers, and they really talk the talk for us. I think it's one thing for myself to say, hey, we're building something awesome. But for a very large company saying that we couldn't move these millions of dollars if it wasn't for Ratable is a completely different context. And for what it's worth too, a lot of the people that invested are product E people. I think that's really important. To have a lead that understands the vision versus the execution is really critical. Like, one of my biggest goals for this raise was to work directly with someone who has built a company before. And Sam has done that. And then we're also working with his brother, Jack, who is the CEO of Lattice right now. And I think that having them behind us and having an amazing bunch of other investors that know go-to-market and enterprise, that value product, that give a shit about the small details is really important. The last thing like to tell you is just like to show you a timeline. We added a changelog to our website to show like how fast we're shipping, both for like our engineering friends in the world that care about that stuff. And then I think both to be able to show momentum in product. The thing that I tell my team a lot is there's two types of like product development companies, and they're both like equally respectable. There's Snapchat as an example. They build new features. And then there's Instagram, who copies the features, tweaks them a little better, and gets better market adoption in 2 months. I tell my team that we always have to be like Instagram. We're innovating, but we're innovating on what exists. If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. We don't have to come up with something brand new. And I think that velocity and validation is really critical in what we're doing. We operate the whole company under the statement, assumption is the mother of all fuck-ups.
Okay, tell me more about that statement. That's the headline leadership principle. Say it again. I want to have the full effect.
Assumption is the mother of all fuck-ups. That is, it is not my credit. It is my co-founder Tom's credit. And it is from a 1980s Steven Seagal movie. I'll tell you what it is right now. Give me 2 seconds. I'm going to pull it up in Slack. It's Under Siege 2 with Steven Seagal. I can send you the YouTube clip afterwards.
Okay.
But basically, look, we're building a company that helps with compliance, helps with audit trails, helps with approval rules for moving money. From one side of it, our company is rooted in security, access control, and sensitive information. So we can't make assumptions. I think it's very important for us to triple check everything and really invest in the quality of our product because it's the industry that we're in. The other side of it is, it goes to customer development and just everything you do. I feel like there's many phrases about assumptions and assuming and all that stuff, but I would prefer to ship a feature after talking to 20, 25, maybe 30 customers before just saying like, ooh, this looks really good. And the reason being is like, sometimes it's the language, right? We are in a specific finance world, but we also build like features and tools for the operations teams, the support team, the engineering team, and so forth. So it's making really easy language. Sometimes it's just usability. Sometimes it's picking color. But I think that to be intuitive, you do have to have some creativity and your own flair, but you also want to remove any assumptions about what you're doing. So there's two sides to it.
Let's dig into that a little bit more, because you had this, I think you said you did 300. I'm like, did I add a zero by accident?
No,
I think you said you did 300 customer interviews in the process of just building the idea.
I think it's over that. We interviewed 300 people, and I think we talked to each one of them between 2 to 5 times. So
wow.
It's a lot. But prior to actually incorporating and shipping product and writing any code, my co-founder and I convinced him to come from Tel Aviv to Seattle and stay on our couch with my wife and I. And we then went to Atlanta, we went to New York, we went to LA, we went to San Francisco, and we interviewed people in the general finance and payments world and tried to understand what was today like. We were trying to understand, how does a company move 50 business payments a month, then 500, then 5,000, then 50,000, 500,000, 5 million? And how do they scale and grow? But we couldn't ask that question specifically. So we would just sit there. Typically, we'd book a 30-minute meeting that would spill over to an hour. Sometimes it would spill over to 2 hours. The lunches were the best, right? If you're a broke entrepreneur, before your idea is working, people would take you out to lunch and you can talk to them forever. But we wanted to make sure that there was a true pain that we were solving. And we also wanted to make sure that we could be bought in for solving a problem for an underrepresented group of people. And I think that's really important. Like, for me, building software is really fun because you're basically saying, like, all right, I'm going to write code, I'm going to design, I'm going to think about unblocking someone else's day. And then you take another layer of it and say, we're going to make that a business. And then we're going to invite a bunch of our friends and people that we value and we think are smart, and they're going to work with us. And then we're going to pay them to just hack on this problem all day, which is a fantastic opportunity. But validating that it's a real thing for other people is really critical. I've pivoted before in other companies, and pivoting is a very gentle way to saying we sincerely fucked up and wasted a lot of money in the process, right? So for this company specifically, Tom and I wanted to know that there is a business, that there is a clear pain, that there wasn't like an aha solution for people, and that we really gave a shit about the people we were solving problems for.
Why 300 instead of 30? Like, because that number is just jaw-dropping in terms of when I talk to other entrepreneurs, before the first line of code gets written, right? Some people it's 20 or 50, or sometimes it's zero, which is obviously a concern. But tell me about, like, why 300? Why'd you go so deep into this process before you committed and started building it?
Look, I'll put it this way. Like, sometimes, like, you can build a web app or an iPhone app or whatever on the weekend. So I think that anything can be sparked from anything. I don't think that there's a rule for it. But for me, what was really critical is, when I build a company, I want to work for them for 10 plus years. And in order for me to dedicate like 10, 20 years to something, I actually want to know and have conviction behind it. And it's not like we like had a plan for the 300 people that we interviewed. It's more of, we talked to three people, and then at the end of the conversation, we felt good about the conversation. We would ask them for an introduction to three other people. We didn't plan this, but basically what you're trying to do is build conviction. It's the same thing as A/B testing something, Adam. Like, you're adrift, you get this. All we're trying to do is build more data points of validation and create patterns. And understanding business payments as an engineer or as a CEO is completely different than understanding business payments as an AP clerk, a controller, a director of accounting, a VP of finance, a CFO, treasury leader. There's so many aspects to it. So we also had to grasp the teams involved in it. And it's not just finance. There's operations always involved. Engineering can be involved if it's high scale. So for us, I don't think that 300 is that number. It's more than 300, right? It's a rough number. But it was 9 months of just getting to the point of saying, fuck yes, I want to do this. And it could be done in 30. I just don't believe it. I think, like, one of the biggest things that I look for when I try to help fellow founders in the world is the level of conviction that you have behind something and how you can talk about it. And usually it's by speaking to enough humans that understand the problem 10 times better than you, even if you experience the problem. Mm-hmm. I think even if you are an expert in that problem, which is cool.
How did your conviction build over that 9 months? So you had obviously tons of conviction at the end of this 9 month period of talking to all these people. How did that look over the course of doing them? It's from three interviews to the next three to the next three. Like, how did the excitement build?
I think you build momentum towards the end, right? I think that by month six, you're like seeing a pattern, and then you're starting to ask specific questions. questions. If you think about it, like business payments is a very long or broad topic. And we went from like business payments for like tiny businesses or to enterprises to like picking a segment. We picked who are our users. We talked about what industries are underserved. That takes a while. So it took a long time. But I think the back third of the process is where we got to like triple check every part of our thesis and get a point of confidence where we could apply for YC, get in, and then literally we spent 6 weeks writing code to build our MVP, and we had customers and moving money on week seven.
At that point, you had a bunch of people to call and you knew the problem inside and out. So it's a different way to start. Yeah.
It's a sales strategy too, right?
It is.
Because you have people, because you're not selling to those people. You're actually delivering what you said you were going to do, which I think is great.
Yeah. What did that conversation look like when you went back to folks after you had the MVP?
The MVP didn't do really shit compared to what we wanted to do. So I think a lot of them were just very supportive that we actually got something done, that we had a little bit of investment, that we didn't give up. And there were some customers that it solved need for. So they signed up right away and we were able to go to demo day with money process and customers and all that stuff. And then there were some customers that were like, cool, come back to me when you can serve an enterprise company. I remember we walked into a room at a big enterprise company and they had 25 people on their finance team passing invoices back and forth to be paid. And we're like, okay, this is like in 4 or 5 years, we should write enough code and really understand the problem to help eliminate having to have a stack of invoices and sending them to each other by walking, getting up off your chair and walking somewhere else.
Yeah, that's amazing. You talk about a different take on finding pain. I think you've talked about finding frustration, and you also have kind of this, I don't know, you're like heat seeking on this empathy for the person and their role and what they do. How do you find that you think differently about identifying problems or articulating the problem when you're doing this kind of customer development?
I'll put it this way. I don't know if I think differently. I've just gotten punched in the face metaphorically enough to have done it wrong.
Yeah.
The number one thing that I look for is not to answer the questions when I walk into the room, is to see if the pains and validation come up on their own. When you talk to someone about any subject, eventually you'll get to a point where their voice changes, there's a gurgle in their throat. I don't know how to describe it, but there's something that there's a pause, there's a moment, there's a change in their tone where you can be like, ah, tell me more about that. For example, I can talk about like cleaning skillets all day and how that could be a better tool for that. But ideally you wouldn't want to start with, Omri, how do you clean skillets? That's not the intro question. But point being is everyone has something that bothers them in relation to that process. And the whole point of the customer development call is to get there and let them get there on their own without asking leading questions. I think we talked about this last week, but there's 60 minutes would ask you, rather than talking to you about the economic development of the United States, they would say, Adam, don't you agree that like Biden's $1.9 trillion stimulus or check is X, Y, and Z? They would put the words in your mouth. And a lot of founders and just people who do product development ask the question right away, and you're leaving the recipient of that question to only answer in one of two ways, which doesn't actually give you any question or data on your question. And what you want to do is let them get there on your own, even if it takes three times as long, because you're actually going to get more honest, real feedback.
And so when you got punched in the face doing it, were you asking leading questions and you figured it out? Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I've built wrong product by asking leading questions. Right.
Yeah. I've been there as well. It's an easy trap to fall into. And what do you do like in the conversation or in your preparation to, or what have you done to build that muscle? It sounds like now it's intuitive for you. You're like, I hear the tone change in their voice, or I see them lean in, or there's something that you pick up on. How do you think you built that skill?
You need to figure out what we would always have a list of like data that we wanted to collect and take notes on. And sometimes I would walk away from a customer development call with, they didn't answer anything I wanted to know. Like the conversation just went there and it was apparent that wasn't a pain. Like we toed around it, but it never got into it. So we always had like rubrics for what we wanted to get. I don't know whether it's a Google Doc or questions in a spreadsheet, whatever. So you always know your goal, but you don't have to force yourself to get to that goal in customer development conversation.
Yeah. What do you learn when you don't get to the goal? Are those still worth doing then?
Oh, 100%. Those are really good. Like those are the shockers, I would say. I actually enjoy those because then I'm like, fuck, are we doing the right thing? Is this interesting? And so forth. Those are like ideally like get to a pattern when those don't come up a lot, but early on they did. Because early on you interview the wrong people too. I think that talking about finding the ICP, for example, like a controller is who we build a lot of our product for. We didn't know that early on. We started out with a lot of CFO conversations. They just like, we missed. The football was just like 2 feet above the attainable catch. And we threw it in the right direction, but we didn't have enough muscle memory and rhythm back and forth. So I think that it's good. It feels bad initially. But like the next day when you wake up, you're like, all right, cool. What was that call for? I wish we like had Gong back then.
No, yeah.
For what it's worth. Yeah. I wish we could look back at those phone calls. Some phone calls, some meetings and so forth. But yeah, I don't know.
So it's part of that 300 is actually finding your ICP or finding your personas. And because you're looking, you're talking to people in different segments. So you're both testing your problem, but then you're also honing in on who's this for and like, where does their
pain really show up? Right. Who's the champion? Who's your buyer? All that stuff. I think that's really critical. That's a question that's really hard to answer for most people starting a company. Like who is paying for it versus who is buying it? Like, the simplest version of this is take the Nintendo Switch. Really cool product. Most of the time, I would assume that parents are buying it for kids. We can talk about, you know, enterprise and all the different layers of people, but the person thinking about the purchasing decision may have completely different qualifiers, but the champion or the person that is going to use your product, you need to check every box for them or as many as possible. Sometimes you build a product that is for one direct person, but I know it's different. That's why we have roles on our marketing website. We want to show that we are able to articulate the benefit to each role that we serve. We actually need to add more roles there. So I think it's a good thing to really know that internally.
Yeah. So taking a step back from the customer development, you had this general area that you were looking in with finance and ultimately accounts receivable and accounts payable. What got you curious about that? What was the initial seed of we need to go explore this market? Because you don't have a background as a accountant or you haven't studied it up to that point. So what got you going?
My co-founder and I both built marketplace businesses. And a big part of marketplaces is paying out sellers. And I think that when you're like early building on a marketplace, you're not thinking about payouts to sellers as accounts payable, you're thinking about it as money moving. And then your company grows bigger, and then you have to do accounting, and then you have to store records in QuickBooks or NetSuite and so forth. And you scale and you spend more time on it. And you're like, oh man, a business payment is completely different than the consumer payment. So Tom and I had both built some variation of what we now sell at Audible built in-house at two separate companies. And that sparked like the aha moment. Talking about how we would, at a marketplace company or at any company that moves a lot of payments, you have two worlds. Do we work on our product or a primary thing that we sell? Or do we work on like our internal tools for like payments functionality? And so for us, it was always like a decision of, do we make seller payments better or do we make the marketplace better? And ideally, you always want to make the marketplace better. So when we realized that we had both spent like years like swearing underneath our breath as we were writing code and building product for marketplaces, there we're like, okay, this is interesting. And marketplaces were one of the kind of target company profiles that move a lot of money, but still need to do it in a B2B fashion.
Yeah. I love that. So yeah, it's interesting. Like your personal pain led you to widen the aperture in this market. And then you like honed into these different segments and customer personas.
And going back to doing the customer development, I think we would have built a horrible product and given up if we would have written code after, like, we were, you know, bitching to each other about how much we hated building internal tools. If the next step was writing code, we would have built a tool for ourselves without really understanding who would use it. And I think that now we truly understand org charts at companies and different levels of frustrations and what does collaboration look like. And that's actually really difficult to do. And we still learn every day, right? So I just think it's critical to keep digging and learning and having a curiosity for how you can improve the process for those people.
Love it. So you tell me about the email you got from YC after, I think it was, 9 months they hadn't heard from you and you...
No, it wasn't that. It was even funnier. So we applied to YC and Tom and I, you do your application. You write like why you're working on this. There's a bunch of questions. You do like a 90-second video, I think, that you submit. And then you wait. And we applied late and we were just hoping to get in because we're like, okay, we're going to raise a tiny bit of money. We're going to try to prove this out early on. Like whenever you're building a company, you're like, I have an idea and that's about it. And then I have an idea and I have some conviction, not all of the conviction. And the TLDR that we got back from YC was, what the hell were you doing for the last 9 months? And I remember we sent back, I think, a link to our spreadsheet, which had every interview. And it had like date, time, comments, feedback. It's like a giant matrix of feedback. And we're like, look, we spent the last 9 months validating what we want to build now. And typically, like going into every accelerator or any accelerator, typically you want to go in with, we have customers and we're trying to accelerate the business. That's the whole point of it. Like, we're trying to grow and focus on sales. And Tom and I were like, no, just let us build it. We'll build it and we'll get customers. And Tom and I thought it would take us 3 to 6 months to build it. And when we got to YC, they're like, okay, how can you guys ship it in 2 weeks? So we sincerely tried to ship it in 2 weeks and that didn't happen. And then it was like 4 more weeks of being mad scientists in the lab and not seeing the sun until we had our MVP. I remember we just rented a house in Palo Alto and like basically my day would be make breakfast, work, go on a run, work, eat dinner, watch like some Netflix, work, and then recycle for 18 hours a day.
That's the glamour right there of the early stage.
Well, but it's fun. I'll put it that way. It is sincerely fun. Like, we're growing as a company and still one of my favorite things to do is to get my hands dirty and to contribute to product development or sales calls or implementation calls. That's the beauty of it.
What have you had to do to now scale yourself? How many people do you have in the company now? And now you're not able to sit there with Tom just building away on the product. What's been the biggest challenge for you? And now managing a bigger team, you have a lot of money in the bank. You have to get to this next level of scale.
I think investing a lot in management and investing a lot in building a leadership team, that's not easy. I think the number one thing that you need to do as you're growing a company is identify what you're not excellent at and start hiring people that are excellent at it. Beyond that, it's just building a recruiting process is hard. We just hired someone who told me that they've been following Ratable for 18 months. And my knee-jerk reaction was like, bullshit. Nobody knew what we were doing 18 months ago. And he's like, oh, yes, I have. And I've been wanting to work here. And when this, you know, JD came up, I applied right away. And I was like, that's really cool. It's just we're currently 40 people and the goal is to double or triple the team this year. And my responsibility is just to focus not on, like, I get glimmers of things that I love every day, but I can't do it for 10 hours or 12 hours a day. If that makes sense. My responsibility is to build infrastructure for people, build infrastructure for business, like BD, sales, recruit amazing people, make sure that they're set up for success. Also, like with the pandemic this year, like we just have to invest in our people more than ever. I'm very much not a starting shooting guard anymore, but like I work at the front office.
Yeah.
But I can still come down to the court and hang out, which is the nice way to say it.
That's good. Yeah. I like the analogy. You're definitely like you're the guy who can design and build and create, but yeah, now you have to be the guy who builds the team and lays the foundation.
It's exciting too. Like hiring people is hard. Building a team is hard, but getting people to work with you is the most enjoyable thing in the world. So it's worth the effort.
Love it. All right, let's wrap this up with the supersonic six. Number one, how much coffee do you drink?
An unhealthy amount, typically around 2 cups a day. I am a huge fan of espressos. I love drinking coffee. I think it's delicious. I will happily drink an espresso at 10 p.m. with a little dessert.
Number two, what's one other Seattle company that you're following or studying right now?
I really love the growth and trajectory of Outreach. It's what they have done in sales enablement and automation and really made a wedge for themselves is what we want to do in accounts payable and accounts receivable. What I mean by that is I feel like 3 or 4 years ago, and I'd love your feedback on this, it seems like every sales automation software was getting acquired by every CRM, and Outreach is actually able to live as a very large company and build a really good product and just build a really good culture for product and sales. And it always felt back in the day that the company would start, it would be hot for 3 years, and then it would shut down or get acquired. But seeing Outreach succeed in that space is really awesome.
Yeah, they've kept going. They've just stayed patient, long-term mindset, keep making it better. I think that's right. Number three, who's one other Seattle person that you're following or learning from right now?
Matt Oppenheimer at Remitly is fantastic. He is the kindest human in the world, but Remitly is doing payments for peer-to-peer, which is completely different in context than what we're doing. But in terms of building the right team, getting the right personnel for a payments company, there's a lot of similarities, and Matt has been really fantastic in helping me get from point A to B.
Matt was on episode 11. So for listeners, go check out episode 11 and hear more from Matt. And Manny Medina from Outreach was on episode 1. So those are great role models, two of my role models too in town.
I was not paid to say those two names.
No, we did not coordinate that. Number four, what's one thing that Seattle needs to improve as a startup hub?
Yeah, I think angel investing, more founders co-op. And I don't know if it's just angel investing, Adam. It's maybe more small funds. I think that small funds with, I don't know, anywhere from $5 to $50 or $100 million in fund size kick the tire. They get it going. They are the catalyst that most founders need. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we had more of those in Seattle, we would see more risks taken. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I think the risk part is really interesting because that's what those funds are for. They're making really big swings.
Number five, what's one piece of advice you'd give your 20-year-old self?
Yeah, just build the company. Just go. I think that's what I did when I was 20. And yeah, I don't like talking about it. I like doing it.
Number six, what can this community do to help you? What call to action do you have for listeners? Like, it sounds like you're hiring a ton. Do you have anything you want people to pay attention to or go check out?
No, just come work with me, please. I don't care what you do. Send me an email, add me on LinkedIn, or tell your friend to come work here. We're fully remote, so great. Here is on the interwebs. But
best place to find open jobs is on the careers page on your website?
Yes.
Perfect. And don't wait 18 months like that guy you just hired, right? Just email Omri if you're interested. Don't wait 18 months.
Yeah, just let me know. I actually sincerely appreciate that, Adam. As a founder yourself, like the emails, the shoot your shot emails are so much better than anything else, right?
Yeah. People don't realize that. It feels great to receive those emails.
It does feel great, but it also tells you the conviction. I got an email. We hired someone, I think, in October. And their email is, hey, I'm just so tired of Bill.com and I hated using it in my last company. Can I come work for you guys? And we found a role for them like within a month.
I love that. It's a great start.
I was like, all right, like you have the passion and the DNA and you get what we're doing. come along for the ride.
This has been great. Thank you. Congrats on the progress. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Adam again. Quick note before you go. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you're enjoying the show as much as I am enjoying making it. If you do like it, please leave a rating or a review. That would help other people find it in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And if you have any feedback, send me an email, adamseattlepodcast@gmail.com. No underscores, no periods, just adamseattlepodcast@gmail.com.